If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the light and love of the One Divine Spirit. I am Commander Lady Athena, and you are listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening our topic is Uncovering Your Life Purpose. Your life is a pattern, much like a koan, K-O-A-N, which means a divine riddle. And believe it or not, your entire life is numerically encoded. So tonight I would like to share some information with you and do an overview of your life so that you may begin your own process of decoding the koan and divine riddle of your own beingness. To begin with, let's take a nice inner journey. So relax, take a deep breath, and let go of any tensions that you may be carrying from your day. And with your next deep breath, just let the breath carry you into the lush, green highlands of your heart. Take a deep breath. And flow into the beautiful green heart space. And I just saw an intense violet-purple light come. And that is the energy of what we call the spiritual traveler. Or, as I like to call it, the energy, which is like an elevator of divine grace. It lifts you and carries you beyond the cares and the brambles and the quagmires of the lower dimensional worlds. So whenever you see that purple light in your third eye, or wherever you may see it, know that is supreme grace and supreme protection. And just follow it. If you're in meditation, that's your inner master leading you through the process that we call soul travel or soul transcendence or expanding your divine awareness. All of the above means the same thing, basically. So as we find ourselves in this beautiful, lush, green highland with beautiful grass, and butterflies, and birds, wonderful array of brightly colored hills, different wildflowers, great profusion. Just find yourself skipping like a child, merrily and carefree, because in the distance you can see there's hot air balloons of bright colors. The gondolas are on the ground, and they're waiting for you. So pick the most delightful hot air balloon that seems to attract you. And notice that the one that is at the gondola is perhaps your most favorite spiritual mentor or avatar or spiritual figure, your teacher, your way shower, the one that makes your heart sing and causes you to feel a great sense of safety and trust. So go now, find your gondola, and your mentor will help you get inside. And now that you're all in your gondolas, hurry up. Okay, there you are. Now, there's going to be a gentle liftoff. And silently, the balloons rise into the deep blue sky. There's no clouds today, and it's just very, very clear blue. And it's interesting how silent it is when you're in the gondola. Just occasionally you'll hear it go, which is the gas vent, I suppose, underneath the gondola or wherever it is. that enables the gas in the balloon to do whatever it does. And so we sail very, very silently into the sky. And now I want you to see clairvoyantly, which would be in your inner imagery, just look. And the way you see clairvoyantly is you place an image there in your imagination. And then spirit enlivens it to cause it to become real. So you'll notice at some point that the imagination takes on a life of its own. And that's how you prime the pump, so to speak, for your inner seership. And we're going to look at your individual life pattern. We're going to take it in 7-year cycles throughout your life. And you can stop in terms of your seeing if you want to when we come to your age. Excuse me, but I'm going to go all the way through to the elderly age, which some of you may be. So first of all, we're going to look at your life from the ages of 1 to 7. Many starseed do not have any recall or very sketchy recall of their childhood. And I think it's because we don't spend a lot of time being in a body that can't function according to what we need it to do for our missions. So we tend to hang out on other levels and allow the physical elemental to keep the body going, which is its job. It's kind of like a little body elf. And it can keep your body alive and do the basic functions. So if you don't have much recall of that time, that's quite fine. But the age from 1 to 7 is for physical integration. That's when all of your physical apparatus comes online and you learn how to walk and talk and do all the things that you do in your childhood. The next cycle of 7 to 14 is your emotional cycle, when you are integrating your emotional body. And also from 14 to 21 is when you integrate your mental body. Now, at the age of 14, something happens. You, for the first time, make a connection with your mental permanent atom, which is like the storage bank for your emotional and mental baggage that you've brought from your previous lifetimes. So not only do you have the onset of hormones, but you have the downloading of your karmic patterning that you brought over with you from previous existences. And mothers, this is why your children, about the age of 14, 14 to 15, become people in their own right. And sometimes people that you scratch your head and you thought, maybe the stork dropped this kid on the wrong doorstep. But at that age, children are desperately trying to integrate themselves and sort themselves out. And that's why they resent any added input, as in parental guidance or directives. They tend to resent that because they have too much at that time on their plate that they're handling. So we need to begin to give them more space to sort themselves out and not to bombard them at that particular stage of their life. Now, the age 14 to 21, when you're integrating your mental body, it's also a time of great confusion. Sometimes children who have been brought up in a religious tradition, they'll just take off and do something totally different. Because again, they're trying to find their own way, their own path. From 21 to 28, here the main item of concern is, how do I fit myself into society? Who am I? What is to be my identity in the world? What is to be my career? And so again, it's a time of great seeking and embracing and tossing out many things. You know, you're really sorting yourself out again at that age. Age 28 to 35, here you'll have probably a focus on, perhaps at this time, romance and relationships and career and marriage and maybe even children. So this is a very, very busy time from 21 to 35 in which you're really defining your family structure, whatever it is that you want it to be at that time, or your career, or both. Age 35 to 42, you're raising your family. And perhaps by then you've really gotten involved in your career, whatever you're doing. And perhaps it's also family and career and all of that together. By now your kids are probably in high school or they're in college. So again, there's a major transitioning here in this particular point in your life. Many times marriages will have a strain in that period because when the family structure begins to change in terms of the dynamics, sometimes the marriage patterning at that point takes a different direction as well. So age 42 to 49, generally speaking for starseed, if you haven't awakened before then, and usually you don't, at least in the past that's the way it was, your spiritual awakening begins to stir into some form of activation that comes at the same time that you're usually going through a midlife crisis where the whole meaning and purpose of your life and your identity is coming up for reassessment. Age 49, you're considered spiritually mature because all of your previous integration has been accomplished in terms of what you brought to bear in this lifetime from previous lifetimes. So when you have a chance, and we're off the air later on tonight, if you want, or at some point, you can begin to map out your life in 7-year cycles and just have that overview and begin to look at the patterns that your life has taken, the directions, how this led to this and that led to that, and so on and so on. Now, age 49 to 56, you're deepening in your spiritual life and practice, ideally speaking, and you're also coping with the changes that occur in your body at that time and the life cycle. And this is often a period of emotional crises for both men and women, because you're beginning to move into middle age where the changes in the body and the things that are going on in your life make you question your desirability and if you still have it, you know. So sometimes we do crazy behaviors at that time because we don't realize that we don't have to act out all of these changes, but we do need to recognize that they're part of that cycle of time, which we would call the cycle of menopause for women, but also men go through a form of change of life at that time as well. So age 56 to 63, this 7-year cycle usually accompanies a major reappraisal. And it's another crisis because by now your children have moved out. You and your husband or significant other are alone now. And there's the empty home or the empty nest syndrome that often people feel at that time. And during that time also, usually your parents begin the process of old age or sometimes leaving their body at that point. So all of these things affect us very much as we watch those that have been our support system in the world make that transition to the other dimensional planes. Or sometimes we find ourselves being the parent to our parents who now need tender loving care like children. So this is a big cycle for most of us. Another cycle that comes up that's very crucial is age 63 to 70. Here again is a major choice because at age 60 to 65, you are given the opportunity to to decide whether you want to wind up your incarnation or you want to continue on. That will produce two things. If you decide you want to wind up your incarnation, generally speaking, there's like a process of retiring gradually from participation, and you'll notice that the body begins its decline. In other words, it doesn't tend to regenerate at that point. It begins to close down into the cycle of completion. Now, if you've chosen to go deeper and on with your mission, you kind of take on a new lease of life about that time. And it can be quite dramatic. It's almost like you're born again into a whole new cycle. You may feel like suddenly you've never been better. You never had more energy, more dynamism, and more go get it, want to do this, want to do that. So it can take either a form, and they're both just fine. They're both just perfect. The age of 70, according to the Vedic teachings, is the time when our mind is the sharpest. We are to have the greatest self-realization and the greatest clarity and sharpness of intellect at the age of 70, according to the Vedic teachings. That's just the opposite of the way people think in the West, isn't it? Age 70 to 77, here you see the life of the saints of God, those people who have deepened so much, they're just founts of wisdom. And they're developed to the point that they can just totally be there for others. And they pass on their legacy by teaching and by sharing their wisdom. And then 77 to 84, sometimes people will stay on because they are such a blessing on the earth. They will stay on into a very, very old age. And again, it's always perfect, however it unfolds. So health conditions and, for some, retirement are factors that can also affect these cycles of your life in your latter years. Now that we are moving into the ascension process, I believe, and this may be speculative at this point, but I believe that many of us will move into a light body and we won't go through the death process. At least that is what I'm given to understand from the process of ascension and transmutation that we're moving into now. At any rate, there's going to be less and less fear around the death process as we become more and more clairvoyant and we can see that our loved ones really haven't gone very far at all. They're just in another dimension of life. No one really dies. We don't ever lose someone we love. So since your life is really a reflection of your purpose for incarnating, what did this overview reveal to you with regard to your purpose? I know for the sake of the show, we have to go rather quickly, so you'll probably want to hang out in this overview when you have a chance and you have the time to do that. So before incarnating, you sat with your overseers and your spiritual mentors and the councils of light that you've come through, and you mapped out to the best of your ability. And believe me, when you're in spirit and in soul consciousness, you have the greatest oversight and neutrality and clarity about what is going to serve you best. And here you really need to trust your process, because you really picked exactly the life and the people and the companions and the circumstances that you needed to fulfill specific objectives. Now, those objectives basically fall into three categories. Number one, we all have unfinished business to attend to. In other words, karma, which is simply another word for action or action-reaction. And with that, there are major challenges and lessons to be mastered, and that's one of your objectives. Number two, to strengthen specific qualities and to develop and practice these. And these can include talents and gifts that you wish to particularly fine-tune and hone and develop or express. Number three, spiritual integration, maturation, and initiation. This is the time and the cycle and the process of our life in which we find and practice a specific spiritual path that becomes our way of connecting back to God and contributing our service for the good of all. So those are the three areas that we all come in, challenges and things to be mastered, things that we want to strengthen and express, and spiritual initiation and integration. And each time you integrate a level, you're initiated into the next. So initiation is the next step, just a fancy word for the next step. And that's an ongoing process. There's no end to it. There's always a next step. So each step of our life's journey is being carefully monitored. And the good wishes and prayers of your spiritual family and other dimensions of life, they're always with you. The illusion of being alone is just that. It's an illusion. You are never for a second, ever, alone. So it's really a good idea to simply trust. Practice trust. Practice letting go of concern. Just trust. And be at peace with your life's process. Trust the wisdom of your spirit in that it elected this specific life pattern and course for you as the very best. When you look at your life, hindsight, you will not regret a single second. Everything will be seen in terms of the lesson. And I know when I look at my life now, it's been the most difficult and challenging things that play back to me as my highest moments, my best moments, and my most spiritual moments. So your purpose in life comes back to you with, in other words, your purpose in life comes back to back, welded as one unit with your biggest areas of challenge. For example, your weaknesses are actually your greatest strengths in their undeveloped stage. So as you have a weakness and you work at it and work at it and work at it, it becomes then your greatest strength. And this applies to talents. And for example, a very insecure, shy person may have to transcend that fear by becoming a person of renown, someone who's out on the stage, someone who has to be in the limelight. So just because you're insecure and shy doesn't mean you haven't chosen a life path in which you're going to be out in the spotlight, so to speak. Or, for example, say you tend to be selfish, which we all are until we spiritually develop and mature. And say, due to this tendency of being selfish, you have chosen a life path in which you're forced by circumstances to care for a handicapped child or an ailing member of your family, where the situation requires that you put the care and needs of another before your own. Very often, this is the kind of life path you'll choose to overcome too much selfishness. What have the circumstances of your life forced or led you to do? Just kind of look at your whole life. What have the circumstances of your life forced, directed, or led you to do? Some common lessons we are called to master are, for example, number one, learning to foresee and discern the effects of our actions before we launch forth. You know, I have used the process for years. Say, for example, I have to do a tour, and it's to a foreign country. I'll sit down in my meditation place, and I will use the process of inner reverie, and I'll review sequentially every single step that I have to take, everything from packing and getting the passport and the documents ready, to booking the flight, to the process of being on the plane, to the arrival, to the energies of the place that I'm going to be going. I meditated through very carefully. So then it's just a matter of very simply following the steps, Usually I'll do that with a notebook, so I'll take notes. And then it's so simple. I just go through what I have put down on my pad, my notebook, and it's very easy. And then there's no stress and strain. Also, you psych up to the energy of what you're going to be involved with. It's important to psych up, you know, to get revved up to face what you're going to be facing. So, you know, you have already visited it in your consciousness and in courting the energies that you're going to be involved with. Also, you can use the same process to decide whether or not you want to do something by leaning into it energetically, walking into it as if you've made that choice, and feeling the energy feedback. The energy feedback will be very clear if it's clear, and it'll feel glitchy if it's not clear. So that's a really good way to get a preview of the outcome of a particular choice. And it's very, very accurate. You always know energetically what you're getting into. Number two, we're here really to learn to take responsibility for ourselves and our actions and to become accountable, developing moral integrity, self-governance and control, and learning to make the wisest choices possible. This is a major part of being a disciple of the higher life and an initiate and a master. A master assumes full responsibility for what they create, allow, and promote. And there's no passing the buck. If you're going to be in the masterful consciousness, you have to become accountable for what you have set in motion. Number three, we work on clear emotional expression. This is a challenge for almost everyone. Learning to ask for what you want, need, or expect without addictive demands, without games, without role play, without any of the dynamics of victim and victimizer, or the tyranny of emotional blackmail or other controlling agendas, which we sometimes run on our loved ones to get them to do what we want to do. We realize that's very immature behavior, and we began to end cycle on that kind of behavior. We find it isn't worth the hassle when you have become really accountable to walking in the higher consciousness. The basic lessons that we are all required to learn and master are found in specific groupings which are related to our birth numerology. So when you write down your birth date and figure out the numerological meaning of your names, you will find a whole revelation of who you are, why you're here, what your life plan is all about. And also I want you to notice what numbers are missing. Sometimes they're missing because these are skills and attributes that you've already worked on and brought to completion or mastery. And sometimes they're just not an item on the plate for this particular menu for this lifetime. Again, you just trust your process. But you'll notice when you read, for example, the Bible, and I would imagine any sacred scripture, there's a great emphasis put on numerology, on the significance of numbers, and that science of sacred numerology is called gematria in Hebrew. And it's very, very significant. So, number one, the numeral one, implies the energies of creativity, confidence, and leadership. The challenges might be that you find it really hard to have the confidence in yourself to create. You might be more imitative, or you might be afraid to step out and really practice your skill. you may be very afraid to step out in leadership and defer and pass your power on to others rather than take the role of leadership. So there's where you see sometimes the challenge is just the opposite of what the energy is calling you to do. So one is creativity, confidence, and leadership. Two is cooperation, balance, and relationships. And again, you may find yourself not wanting to cooperate, being really challenged in keeping balanced in your relationships, or even being able to work in partnership with others. That may be the challenge of the two. Three is expression, sensitivity, and administration. This is your multitasking energy, a person who can do many things at the same time. By the same token, however, you can be jack of all trades, master of none, and totally confused and spazzed out in the sense of being too sensitive and too reactive and too into everything to where you become just a busybody spinning your wheels. So again, the three demands that you master expression, clarity of expression, sensitivity, not to just everything in your environment, but sensitivity to the voice of God within you, the spirit within you, and administration, to be able to organize the flow of events with great skill. Four is stability and patience with a gradual unfoldment of your life's process and building a firm foundation. That would be in all the areas of your life. Five is freedom, self-discipline, living in grace. And so the challenge here is to be able to express your freedom without going overboard and bringing it into licentiousness and license and self-discipline without being harsh and living in grace, which is really trusting God 100% with your process and living in that wonderful place that comes when you do trust God. Six is vision, acceptance, and service. Seven is trust, openness, and spiritual fulfillment. Eight is abundance, power, and authority. That's a big test for almost every disciple, no matter what numbers you're working with, because we have to use our wealth to invest into God's kingdom being manifested on earth. We have to use our power without abuse of authority and power. And we have to take authority without being dictatorial. Again, and abusing leadership, power, and authority. Number nine is integrity, wisdom, and universal law. And interestingly enough, sometimes if you don't fulfill universal law, you end up behind bars fulfilling the laws of man. So that can be, again, a challenge with a nine. 10 refers to the inner gifts, which then you gift into the world in some tangible form. It's also co-partnership with God for the benefit of others. And then the master's numbers are a double accentuation of all of the above, but I'll just take a few. The 11 is illumination, unique individuality, and is the path of the master. Either you are a master, you're becoming a master, you're following a master. And generally speaking, it's all three. So, 22, that's a ministry of dimensional bridging and interdimensional connection, coordination, and communication. 33 is the master healer, the energy worker, the one that works with the Metatronic Tree of Life. 44 is the master architect, the master builder, the one who is the architect of God's kingdom on earth. 55 is living in freedom and grace, inwardly and outwardly. So in your life pattern, it's important to remember that we have been everything. You know, a great, great, great master may take the next incarnation and be, you know, a junk in the gutter. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't. You take the most heinous criminal and put them next to the most glorious saint, and when they're in their soul bodies, you can't tell them apart. So we're all equally divine. We just don't all equally have the same type of expression in any given lifetime. So we will eventually learn not to pass judgment on ourselves or anyone else, because everyone is where they need to be, doing exactly what they need to do to fulfill their life patterning. We can trust our children. We can trust ourselves. We can trust our lives. We can trust life. Life itself. And if you could do that, you're going to have the most wonderful life without a care in the world. And you'll find worry becomes totally, it becomes totally something foreign to you, because you have such total trust in the process of life itself, which is another word for God. So let's pause and ask right now, what message do you have for me, Lord? What message do you have for me, Lord? And you will write that down, perhaps, and ask yourself later when you have some time, what message do you have for me, Lord? And you might hear something like, be still and know. Or, be still and know I am God. Or, trust me and relax. Or, take care of yourself. Which is another way of saying, love yourself enough to recognize and respect your needs. Do you know that you are worthy of the best care, the best respect, and the most compassionate love from you, yourself? You're worthy of that. So take care of yourself, because if you take care of yourself and love and respect yourself and recognize your needs, you're going to do that same thing for other people. And I don't actually think you can until you do it to yourself first. So make it part of your spiritual regimen to frequently ask, what message do you have for me, Lord? Our brother, Neil Donald Walsh, received the contents for his wonderful series of books, Conversations with God, by asking just such a question. Isn't that interesting? If you haven't read those books, they're utterly delightful. And it will inspire you to begin your own conversations with God, because God is always speaking. It's just that sometimes we diss the voice because we think it's our own thoughts. But God speaks in your own thoughts, using your own words, using your own belief system. How else is he going to speak to you? Right? So trust affirming and positive information when it's given to you, because God is always affirming and positive and loving in what he says to you. So in discovering your life's purpose, here are some more clues. Really observe what occupies your attention the majority of the time. What question are you trying to answer? Or what problem are you trying to solve? Missions are just tucked in to that whole dynamic. What occupies your attention? What question are you trying to answer? What problem are you trying to solve? There's your mission right in there. That's what you're on earth to do. Now, this gives you a very clear indication of your major life's objective. And again, Another area to look at is, what do you find yourself griping about the most? What's your pet peeve? What really ticks you off? What provokes you to criticize, judge, or, big key here, what causes you to withhold your energy from people, situations, or the world? Do you know, when you withhold your energy from anyone or anything, that means you're closing down and contracting your loving. In some manner, you have blocked your loving flow. And this is a major, major cause for energy blockages. And they could be on any level. So one of the challenges for us is to not close down and contract, but to remember there's only one divine life present in everyone and everything. Now, you don't have to flow energy and support towards unacceptable behaviors that other people may be involved with, but you can keep yourself open energetically by realizing these are all souls learning life lessons that they have opted to learn. So we can have that awareness that everybody's doing the very best they know how with what they have to work with, given their karma and their understanding, including yourself. So let people be, and let yourself be, and bless yourself, and bless others, and bless your life. Let your life be one blessing, one gratitude, all the time expressed, every time, in every situation, in every circumstance, that gratitude and great, great allowance and tolerance be your hallmark. So again, what area is the most problematic for you? The physical, the emotional, the mental, the subconscious, your life circumstances, your job or career, your family, or other relationships? What is your problematic area? That, beloved, is like the grain of sand in the oyster shell that provides the irritant that enables the oyster to make a pearl. So the pearl of your life is formed by the irritants and the things that grate against you, or as Ram Dass used to call it, grist for the mill. These are the things that you're here to work out, work through, overcome, transcend, learn to love, or move into neutrality and acceptance. Those are your options. But it's going to be in your face until you've learned to either love it, or it just doesn't matter anymore. And not apathetically, but where, you know, you just don't notice it anymore. Like you push the button until there's no more response left. So look at those areas, because that's part of your major lesson in this lifetime. So often the problem area that we overcome and master in our lives becomes our on-job training for an area of service that we later enter. How often is the recovered drug addict or alcoholic or emotional dysfunctional basket case, how often do they turn out to be in a field of ministry or psychological counseling dealing with those very same situations? So once you've mastered and overcome something yourself, you have a gift. So your problem turns right around and becomes the blessing that you give to help others. So never, never fault yourself for having a fault, a shortcoming, a problem, whatever it is, because God works all things together for your good. And ultimately, every bad news story is going to have a happy ending. Every bad news story is going to have a happy ending. Trust it. Believe it. It's true. Now, there are several things to bear in mind that are like universal principles in that they apply to everyone all the time. Number one, you are never given anything you can't handle. However, you may not realize that before the fact. Usually it's like 99.9% and you're hanging on with your toenails and fingernails and everything, but you get through it. Number two, God loves you unconditionally, all of you, just as you are. You are 100% acceptable and divinely approved of, regardless of your role play, your costuming, and whatever else you have brought to this earth drama. It is simply role play. That's all it is down here. This is an earth drama. It's an earth school. It's reality. Reality and the unreality. It's walking through life in a specific valence so that you can learn the dynamics of that particular consciousness presentation. That's all. Number three, God never judges or punishes you. You simply experience the repercussions of choices that you have made and causes that you set in motion. So the universe teaches us through the law of cause and effect. That's the way we learn what works and what doesn't, what to do and what not to do. And actually, in truth, we judge ourselves in the afterlife. We are given a complete life review in which we see every single scene of our lives. And in that review, we feel and have complete clarity about the effects of our actions, thoughts, words, and deeds on other people, how they felt, how they saw us, how it has affected their lives. And it's made so clear that we can, we absolutely know how successful we've been in our life and where we need to keep working and where we need to, in some cases, reincarnate and work through those processes again. I think now we're not going to be reincarnating because we're not going to have a planet in the third density to reincarnate upon. That's why our lives are like really packed with unfinished business now. We're just as busy as we can be working through things and forgiving things and stepping free through grace, because whatever you can cast into the grace of God, go for it. That's the biggest and best cop-out you will ever have, is to cast your burdens on the Lord, because He cares for you. He cares for you. That's right out of the Bible. Cast your burdens upon the Lord because He cares for you. So when you do that, it means release into unconditional love and grace. Those things that aren't real anyway. You've just bought into them and owned them, and you can cast them upon the Lord and have Him dissolve them in grace. And you do that by just asking for forgiveness for whatever it is that you did that was out of balance. And ask that the lesson be made very clear to you so that you can anchor that truth of that lesson and that particular whatever it was that you were to learn from that. The Egyptians have a really beautiful symbol for the afterlife judgment process in the goddess of truth, which is called Maat, M-A-A-T. And Maat stands with a balancing scale in her hands. And on one side of the scale is a feather, that's the feather of truth, and on the other side is our heart. And the lesson here is to recognize that truth is always the clearest approach to life. And a heart that's free of deceit is as light as a feather. It was interesting. Sai Baba was speaking about truth, and somebody asked him, they said, well, Swami, what if what you were going to say was the truth, but in saying that you were going to cause somebody great pain and great trouble? And Swami said, if the truth would cause harm to another, then it is better you remain silent. So if it's going to hurt someone, zip it. You don't have to say things that are going to offend or hurt someone. Jesus says that we should speak the truth with love. But when you speak the truth with love, it's not condemning. It's always affirming and gentle and kind, like he would want to be spoken to if he was on the other foot, your foot. So I thought that was interesting. So in general, straightforward honesty is always the best policy with regards to yourself. When it involves another person, it is perfectly all right to remain silent. We are not the keepers of the shoulds here. That is God's job. Judgment and those things should have no part in our lives as lovers of God and lovers of humanity. So, well, now you're probably thinking, well, what about my Ashtar Command mission and my spiritual purpose and ascension? What am I here to do as a member of the ground crew? Well, you know, now is the time to erase all these ideas of separate compartments. Get this, your life, all of it, every single second of it, every situation and every expression is your mission. And your greatest contribution to this earth and the Ashtar Command and to God will be you, the gift of you, the true Christ conscious, illumined you. So this show is cosmic pep talks for closet Christs. The word Christ means the anointed one. And we are to get that anointed one out of the closet of limitation, separation, all of the things that we have woven around our immortal love, and get it out into the exercising within the arena of life. Our life in the world, the community. And that is our mission. You know, if you're all boxed up in yourself and your own problems, how can you be of service to others unless you're enacting the way to step free from those problems, which is part of what we're to do as well. So we are here to learn to master only one lesson, unconditional love, regardless of race, creed, situation, circumstance, or environment. And that is the Melchizedek vow that we all take before we embark on our missions. And all we ever need to ask at any point is simply, what would love do now? And then just do that. That's it. And some wise person somewhere wrote, love and do what thou wilt, for that is the whole of the law. So none of the Ten Commandments would be necessary if we truly loved God and others. And that's why in the New Testament, when Jesus was asked, what was the most important of all the laws and commandments, he replied, that we are to love God, the Lord our God, with all of our hearts, mind, soul, and strength, and to love our fellow man as ourself. That in these two, all of the other laws and the teachings of the prophets were fulfilled. And that is what we're here to do. Again, love never fails. Love is the greatest healer. Love is the savior of this earth. Love is the only true religion. Love is the only way back to God. And pure love is the golden key of ascension. And in the Ashtar Command, we are love in action here. And that is our overall soul purpose. So let's go out chanting on I Hu, which brings in the energies of loving compassion. Deep breath. On I Hu. On I Hu. On da, da,